Danny spent his time by the fire. Doctor's orders, of course. I was splitting wood when I noticed Leanne had joined us. She had her feet up in the air and her head resting on her knees. I was getting worried. She wasn't interacting with any of us. Laying down the maul I was splitting with, I went over to her and knelt down. I put a hand on her head and ran my fingers through her hair. "Hey, kiddo, are you all right?" She wouldn't lift her head. All I got in return was a nod. I tried to raise her head. "Hey, look at me." She resisted at first, then finally looked up. What I saw scared me more than I could have imagined. Her face was blank, completely devoid of any expression. It was hard to witness. The face I was looking at was not the same beautiful girl I loved. It was truly disturbing. It was obvious I was surprised, so I tried to play it off. "Hey, what's the matter? You've been acting funny the last few days." With that same expressionless face, she replied, "Nothing. I'm fine." I looked straight into her eyes. "Bullshit," I said. I knew it would shock her and let her know I was being serious. She suddenly dissolved into tears. She was trying to say something, but I couldn't make it out. She was completely unintelligible. I wrapped my arms around her and whispered in her ear, "It's okay, whatever's wrong. It's going to be okay." I leaned back and wiped her face. "Hey, calm down. Just try and calm down." Finally, through her sobs, she said, "It's not okay. It'll never be okay." I stood up. "Come on, let's go to the cabin." I grabbed her hand and led her back to the cabin and to her bed. She lay down and I lay beside her, rubbing her hair. "Look, I know you think it's the end of the world, but it's not. It's really not." She didn't respond, and she was lying, facing away from me, so I couldn't see her expression. "It'll all come back someday. It may take a long time, but it will come back."
"No, it won't. It's all gone, and it'll never be back," she said in a soft voice.
This is what I was afraid of. She thought the life she knew was gone forever. It was gone for now, but to dwell on that fact could eat you alive. I hoped someday everything would come back, and of course, I didn't know whether it would. But I wanted to express a hopeful opinion. Being stuck in a mindset like Leanne's would only bring more trouble. "Hey, I haven't told anyone yet, but I saw a satellite the other night when I was out sitting by the fire." I paused. "You know, if there's still satellites, then everything isn't gone. Maybe it's just around here that people are experiencing this. Maybe there are places where things are normal." She shrugged her shoulders.
"Doesn't matter. We couldn't get there anyway."
I rubbed her head again. "I know it sucks, and I know you think life is over, but it isn't. I promise you that." In a robotic voice, she replied, "I want to go to sleep." I lay there looking at the back of her head, then leaned over and kissed her. "Okay, I love you, know that, and it will be all right." I got up and walked toward the door. We'd taken to keeping all the guns by the door because it was easier to pick them up as you left. I paused by Leanne's H&K and picked it up. As I came back to the fire, Mel was sitting in a chair. "What's going on?" she asked, as I laid the H&K on the table. Sitting down, I told her. "She's depressed. I'm worried about her." She pointed at the weapon. "Why'd you bring that out?" "I don't want her to be left alone with a gun." Danny looked up from the fire.
"Whoa, it's that bad, you think?"
Mel looked at him, then back to me. "What? She's not going to do anything like that."
It sounded like she was trying to convince herself more than anything else. "Well, I don't want to give her an opportunity," I said, as I kicked at a log.
"If you're that worried, you better keep an eye on her, Morg," Thad said.
"I think so, too. She has been acting a little weird, withdrawn," Bobby said.
"What's the matter with Leanne?" Little Bit asked.
I looked at her and smiled.
"She's just sad."
"Is she going to be okay?"
"Yeah, she'll be fine."
"She isn't talking to me either," Taylor said.
"I think everyone just needs to help keep an eye on her," Danny said. At dinner, Leanne didn't come out, despite Mel and me both trying to get her out of bed. It reinforced our fears. The rest of us sat around the tables in the light of a lamp and had our dinner. But conversation was slow, and Mel and I were both clearly distracted. After dinner, we cleaned up and sat around the fire a bit longer. Danny was antsy after sitting around so much and offered to take the first watch. I lay down but had trouble falling asleep. My mind was busy thinking about how to deal with Leanne. Danny woke me up around midnight, and I went out to the fire as usual. I'd been out there for a couple of hours when a sound caught my ears. After so much time without man-made noises, I was acutely aware when they were present. This one was certainly an engine. I listened to it for a while until I was able to determine that it was getting closer. In fact, it sounded as if it was heading straight for our little camp. I jumped up and ran over to Thad and Jeff's cabin, knocking on the side.
"Hey, get up! Someone's heading this way!"
I heard them both scuffling around, and Jeff yelled out,
"We're coming!"
I ran over to Danny's cabin and did the same thing, then headed back to my cabin. I opened the door and stuck my head in.
"Mel, wake up!"
"What is it?" she asked as she sat up.
"There's a vehicle headed this way. Get your weapons and be ready just in case. Stay here unless you hear me call for you."
"All right," she said, as everyone, Leanne included, woke up. As I ran up to the guys, I asked,
"Do you guys hear it?"
"Yeah, we hear it," Jeff said.
"Sounds like it's going to come right down the road there," Danny said.
"Let's take up some positions where we can see them, if they come in here," Thad said.
"Good idea. Let's break up in pairs," I said.
"Me and Jeff will go out by where the driveway cuts off the road," Thad said.
"All right, Danny, let's go behind the chicken coop." As we split up, the dog started barking, announcing that whatever it was a lot closer now. They ran toward the road, tails up.
"What do you think it is?" I asked Danny, as I looked for lights.
"Sounds like a four-wheeler or something."
"That's what I thought. And whoever it is riding blacked out. There's no lights."
"Yeah, I'm trying to get my eyes," Danny said, as his head bobbed and weaved, looking through the brush and trees.
As the sound grew closer, I tensed up, my carbine at low ready. I had my thumb on the safety, ready to flip it off and start shooting. We both had lights mounted to our rifles. They used the CR123 batteries, so we seldom used them, as there were no replacements.
"It just turned off the road," Danny said, as he gripped his rifle a little tighter.
I looked through the NVGs and could see a large UTV pulling in. As it pulled in past my cabin, I nudged Danny and we both stepped out, turning on the lights and illuminating the buggy. At the same moment, Thad and Jeff jumped out.
"Stop right there!" Danny shouted.
I followed.
"Show me your hands! Hands up, all of you!"
A light way brighter than the ones on our rifles lit up on the buggy.
"Morgan, it's us!"
a voice called out. I shielded my eyes and could see Ted standing up in the rear of the buggy.
"Holy shit, man! You guys scared the shit out of us!"
The buggy shut down, and they started getting out as we gathered around it.
Yeah, looks like you guys are ready, Mike said.
Almost. I didn't see Ted up there. He would have cut us in half, I said.
No, he wouldn't have. Old Thad was about to blast him with that scatter gun of his, Jeff said.
Ted turned to look at Thad.
I'm hurt.
Thad smiled.
Not as bad as you would have been.
Ted and Mike both laughed. Danny peered into the back of the buggy.
What's with them? Are they DHS? He asked, pointing, shock apparent on his face.
Ah, they're a surprise for the old man, Ted said.
Let's get him out, Mike said to Jamie and Perez. They pulled three people out. I was surprised to see one of them was a woman. She was trying to mumble through the tape over her mouth. The two men stood there looking around, then looked at each other with a quick glance. Suddenly, they bolted for the trees. With their hands cuffed behind their backs, they weren't exactly making a graceful escape. The one in the lead almost made it to the tree line. Jeff was closest to them, and he swung his AK like a bat, clipping the guy in the back of the head. It was a perfect hit, knocking the guy unconscious. He fell like a sack of bricks. The second one was caught by Mike, who grabbed the guy's cuffed hands from behind. His feet went out from under him, and he crashed to the ground as well.
Nice try, boys, nice try, Mike said, as he rolled the one he had a hold of onto his stomach.
Ted had forced the woman to the ground, too, in case she tried to make a run for it. She was still running her mouth through the tape. Ted leaned down and pulled the tape back.
What the hell do you want?
You dumbasses have no idea the trouble you're...
She was cut off when Ted slapped the tape back onto her mouth. He was laughing and said,
No, you have no idea who you're messing with and what sort of trouble you're in. I suggest you shut up.
I pointed at the woman.
What happened to her?
Ian grinned and pointed at Jamie.
That happened to her.
Yeah, she took a swing at Jamie, so Jamie delivered a beautiful headbutt back to her, Mike added. Jamie looked down at the woman as she glared up at her.
Bitch hit me. Bit off more than you could chew, didn't you?
This started another muffled tirade through the tape. Another motorized sound drifted up through the night. Mike smiled.
Looks like the party's about to start.
Is that Sarge? Danny asked.
Yeah, he's on the way in.
Mel and the girls came out, standing by the door of the cabin with Bobby. Mel called me over.
What's going on?
They're done with their little sneak and peek and picked up some prisoners. She looked at them, eyebrows raised.
A woman?
Yeah, she's got a lot to say, too.
What are they going to do with them? Taylor asked.
Sarge is on his way to get them. Moments later, the boat came around the bend in the river and glided up to the bank. Sarge hopped off before it even stopped and came stomping up the hill. Mike and Ted were standing there, smiling like the cats that ate the canary. Sarge stopped in front of the three prisoners, his hands on his hips.
I said bring me one, he barked, shaking his head. Ah, hell, we figured three would give you three times as much fun, Ted said.
Sarge shook his head.
Fucking overachievers.
Mike was leaning against the buggy.
You ungrateful old prick, he said with a smile.
Sarge smiled.
Let's get him loaded up. One of you will come back with me. Then we'll send the boat back for the rest of you.
They led their captives down to the boat, the woman still being difficult. As Sarge was getting her into the boat, he looked at her.
Don't worry, Missy. You'll have plenty of time to talk.
She stopped her mumbling for a moment. Then, with her brows furrowed, she started with renewed vigor. Sarge laughed and pushed her into the boat. The other two were loaded up, and Mike jumped in with them. Mike waved at Ted with a big grin.
See you guys later.
As the boat pulled away, we drifted back to the fire pit. Danny tossed a couple more logs on the fire. Thad brought out the pot with our dinner leftovers and set it on the fire. Mel and the girls came out and sat by the fire too. All the activity ensured no one was going to sleep anytime soon.
"Y'all hungry? We got a little left here," Thad said.
"Hell yeah. Anything is better than those MREs," Perez said.
"How was the camping trip?" Jeff asked.
"It was an interesting time," Ian said.
"So how'd you guys end up with them?" I asked.
Ted pointed at Jamie.
"She did it. Did a damn fine job, too."
"I don't know about all that," Jamie said, waving her hand dismissively. Ian cackled.
"You should have seen her tackle that broad."
"Ho, catfight," Jeff said.
Jamie shot him a look. There wasn't much of the rice and squirrel left, but each of them managed to scrape together a bowl. Perez was munching away when he asked,
"What kind of meat is this?"
"It's squirrel,"
Little Bit shouted. Jamie looked at her bowl, picking at the meat.
"Really?
I'd have never guessed." "Thad is a magician with meat in all forms," Danny said.
"Apparently so.
It's really good," Jamie said, as she scraped the last few grains of rice from her bowl. After she was done, Jamie stood up from the table.
"I don't know about you guys, but I'm beat. I'm gonna sack out until they come for us."
"Go to our cabin. You can use it," Jeff said as he stood up.
Jamie eyed him with suspicion. Jeff held up his hands.
"I won't be in there. I'll be out here. Promise."
Jamie looked around at everyone.
"Well, all right. Thanks."
She went to the buggy and dragged her pack out, taking it to the cabin with her.
"Any of you guys want to get some sleep?" I asked.
They all shook their heads.
"Nah, I want to sit by the fire and warm up," Ian said.
The rest of the guys nodded their heads in agreement, so we spent the rest of the night sitting out by the fire. There wasn't much talk. We just sat, watching the flames dance. Mel woke me up just before dawn. I'd fallen asleep in my chair. I looked around. Thad was still there tending the fire. I was wet from the dew and felt cruddy.
"Why don't you go in and get some sleep?" Mel asked.
"Nah, I'll wait.
How many eggs do we have?"
"A bunch. They're really starting to lay now."
"Why? You want to make breakfast?"
"Yeah, I'm gonna make some tortillas and scramble up some eggs. Maybe throw in a little pork."
"I'll make the eggs if you want to do the tortillas," Thad offered.
"Deal," I said.
Thad whipped up the eggs using some of the rendered fat and diced pork. I mixed up the tortilla batter and rolled it into balls, then pressed them out. Using a hot skillet with just a little oil in it, I quickly cooked them, turning out about 2 dozen. Thad had used the big Dutch oven, and it was about half full of fluffy eggs. My mouth watered at the thought of the breakfast burritos. When we set them out, everyone jumped up to make theirs. Even Leanne was eager to have some.
"This is so good," Jamie said.
"Thanks, guys."
"Yeah, Dad, thanks,"
said Taylor. Everyone else nodded appreciatively, expressing thanks between bites. At about 8, we heard the boat coming up the river. Thad looked into the pot. There was just enough for one more burrito. He rolled up the last of the eggs and set it back in the oven to keep warm. We all sat facing the river and watched as the boat glided to a stop at the river's edge. Mike hopped out and came up to the group. He stood there with his hands on his hips, looking at everyone.
"Look at this bunch of frickin' nuts."
"Well, good morning to you too, sunshine," Ted said, as he stuffed the last bite of a burrito in his mouth.
"Oh, that's nice. Rub it in, dickhead," Mike said, then looked over and saw the girls.
Looking at Mel, he mouthed a silent, "Sorry."
"What, you hungry?"
Don't they make breakfast over there? Thad asked.
Not like this, Perez barked.
No, I didn't eat that stuff this morning, Mike replied, looking at Mel. She couldn't help but smile at him.
Thad lifted the lid from the Dutch oven and handed Mike the burrito. Mike flashed a huge smile. Taking a bite, he held it up.
Thanks, man. I miss the food here.
Miss the food here? I asked. We don't have too much to brag about.
I know, but you still manage to make something that tastes good with what you don't have. Believe me, you don't want to eat the stuff they serve down the river.
He shoved the rest in his mouth.
Ted stood up. Well, as great as this was, I think we need to be getting back. Let's get everything loaded up.
He looked at Mike.
What's the old man doing with those poor souls?
Mike grinned.
Oh, he let him stew all night. He's going to question them today. Wait till you hear his plan.
Mike started to laugh.
You're gonna love it.
Really? Do tell, Ted said, crossing his arms over his chest. Mike wagged a finger at him.
No, no, you'll have to wait. I want him to tell you. It's priceless.
All right, then. Let's get our stuff. Ted turned to Thad. Thanks for breakfast. I appreciate it. Then he looked at Mel.
Thanks, Mel.
Jamie, Perez, and Ian thanked us all as well. They quickly loaded their gear into the boat. Danny, Jeff, Thad, and I went to see them off. I waved at them.
Come back when you can't stay so long.
Ted gave me the finger, getting a laugh out of everyone.
Yeah, bring some groceries back when you come, Thad said.
Sure. We'll swing by Publix, Ian said, as the boat began to back away from the bank. We laughed and waved. But in the back of my head, I'd wondered if things would always be so happy. Sarge's plan to invade was going to happen soon. And even though I didn't know too many details, the sheer size of the operation told me it was going to be dangerous. We could only hope that they all stayed safe.
Chapter 15. The three prisoners sat on the ground, hands tied behind their backs. Sarge sat on a bucket in front of them, staring at each in turn. The woman's face was covered in blood that ran from her nose down to her shirt. Both of her eyes were now black from the headbutt Jamie had delivered. Her hat was gone now, and her red hair hung down over her face in strings. She looked, in a word, miserable. Sarge stared at her, then looked at the tag on her shirt.
All right there, singer. I'm going to remove the tape from your mouth so we can talk, Sarge said, as he pulled it off with a satisfying rip.
Once the tape was removed, it left a clean rectangle on her face, giving her a comical look. Singer blew some hair out of her face, then looked at Sarge.
Do you know who you're fucking with?
Sarge looked up at the people gathered behind him.
Do we know who we're fucking with?
Mike and Ted laughed, and Ian had a big smile on his face. Sheffield and Livingston both were expressionless. Jamie had a sly grin in her face, remembering the sound Singer's nose made when she crushed it. Sarge looked back at Singer.
Yeah, I think we do. Do you have any idea who we are?
Singer glanced around the assembly of people.
A bunch of dead men, she looked at Jamie, and one dead bitch.
Jamie's grin grew into a smile, and she winked at Singer. Naturally, this sent Singer off on a tirade of cussing. Sarge snapped his fingers in front of her face to get her attention.
Look! We're here to help with the security of the camp. I just need a little info.
The two men tied beside Singer shared a look, then motioned that they wanted to speak. Sarge pulled the tape from one of them.
If you guys are here to help with the security of the camp, why are we tied up?
We have intelligence that the camp has been infiltrated. We have to be cautious.
Bullshit,
Singer shouted. Don't tell these assholes a damn thing.
Sarge looked over at her.
I'm not talking to you. You need to keep quiet. We're DHS. You bunch of idiots are under our authority right now. You answer to us. We don't answer to you.
Singer screamed, then added,
Now untie me.
Sarge smiled and got up, going inside the command tent. He returned with a pair of socks. Singer looked at them, then back at him.
Don't even think about it.
Sarge sat back down in the bucket and smiled.
What? I need to change my socks. You know how your feet get when you've been wearing the same socks for 4 or 5 days? My dogs are barking.
Sarge looked back at the man he spoke to moments ago while he unlaced his boots.
Like I said, we have to be careful. Now, we're going to see if you're one of the ones who snuck in. What's the name of your CO?
Sarge pulled one of his socks off and wiggled his toes.
Ah, damn, that feels good.
Don't tell him he's fishing. They aren't here to help us, Singer shouted. Sarge had his foot pulled up, picking at his toes. Sheffield and Livingston both looked on, uncomfortable with where the situation was. Singer looked at Sarge as he dug between his toes.
What the hell is wrong with you, you nasty son of a bitch? She asked.
With more speed than anyone thought the old soldier possessed, Sarge reached out, quickly grabbing her bottom jaw and forcing her mouth open. He then forcefully crammed a rolled-up sock into her mouth. Singer gagged and choked as Sarge smiled and ran his finger underneath her nose. Her face turned a bright red, almost purple, veins bulging in her neck. Almost immediately, Mike shouted,
Holy shit! That's the nastiest thing I've ever seen!
Jamie, too, was sickened by what she saw. With her hand cupped over her mouth, she said,
Oh my God, I think I'm going to be sick.
She turned away from the scene and quickly walked toward the brush. Mike started retching too. Ted shook his head. He knew the old man was capable of doing almost anything, but this pushed the limits. Sheffield grabbed Sarge's arm.
What the hell are you doing? Shutting her up. She isn't hurt. She'll live.
The two men sitting beside Singer were clearly horrified. There was one more sock sitting there, and neither of them had any desire in their souls to find out what it tasted like.
Mitchell, take that out of her mouth, Sheffield said.
Sarge swiveled around.
She ain't hurt, he said.
Then looked back at Singer.
But she did shut up.
Sarge moved in closer to Singer, who was now a real mess. Drool ran down her chin, and with every breath, through her broken nose, snot flowed back and forth.
All right, missy. I'm gonna take this out now. You say one damn word, and it'll be my drawers in your mouth next.
Singer looked up and nodded weakly.
And that applies to you too, gentlemen.
Sarge pulled the sock out. It was followed by an impressive amount of saliva that rolled onto her shirt. Singer spit repeatedly into the dirt. She hung her head and didn't look up. Sarge looked at the other two men and smiled.
Gentlemen, I guess it's up to you.
If you guys are here to help, why'd you do this? One of the men asked.
Sarge looked at his name tag.
Well, Dunlap. It's like this. We have intelligence that suggests there are elements inside the camp that may be planning to take it over. We don't know why they want to do this or who they are, so we are a little suspicious.
Behind Sarge, Sheffield and Livingston shared a look.
What? Take it over? Who the hell would want to do that, and why?
The man sitting beside him began to mumble through his tape. Sarge reached over and pulled it off, then looked at his name tag.
What you got to say there, Wallace?
I can believe that there are some that would want to. There's a lot of people in there that are unhappy.
So you understand our need for security, then? Sarge asked.
Wallace nodded.
With that in mind, then, can you help us out?
Sure. I'll do whatever I can to help out.
I'll help, too, Dunlap said.
Out fucking standing, gentlemen, Sarge said, as he stood up. Let's get these guys some grub, maybe a drink of water.
What about her? Ted asked, nodding at Singer.
Leave her ass right where she is, but someone bring her a drink of water.
Or some gasoline to wash that funk out of her mouth, Mike said.
Ted, can you guys build us a sand table model of the camp? Sarge asked.
Sure. Ian, you want to give us a hand? Jamie, you too? Ted replied.
The four headed off to start building the model. Before Dunlap and Wallace were cut loose, Sarge asked them a few more questions.
What's your CO's name?
Charles Tabor. But I don't think he wants to take over the camp. Hell, he already runs it, Wallace said.
I agree. Just wanted to make sure my info was accurate, Sarge said, then waved them off. Go with these fellas. They'll get you some grub and water.
Sheffield motioned for Sarge to follow him into the CP. Once inside, Sheffield fell into a chair, running his hand through the stubble on his head.
What the hell? Are you just making this shit up as you go?
Yeah, that's not what you told us you were planning, Livingston said. It's called improvisation. Look, we have very little intel to work on here. But think about it. We roll up and tell old Charles Tabor that we've intel, saying some of his people are trying to take over the camp, and we're there to help him.
Do you think he's going to question it?
Why in the hell would he believe that? Sheffield asked. We've got the map the guys made. It's very good. Like someone inside drew it up. Plus, Sarge pointed out the tent flap. Those two are going to give us even more info, so we'll be able to label everything on it. And I'm going to take their IDs with me to show them.
What the hell is that supposed to prove? Livingston asked. Sarge shrugged his shoulders.
We'll have to see how he reacts to it. It'll lend credence to the story that there are people inside the camp looking to overthrow his command.
I don't know. This just seems like a clusterfuck in the making, Sheffield said.
You got a better idea, Captain?
I'm all ears, Sarge said, as he sat back in one of the chairs.
No, not really. It just seems kind of sketchy.
You want to try a frontal assault? Maybe a classic pincer movement?
We need at least 5-1 to pull that off, and there aren't nearly that many people here.
If this works, they're going to open the front door and invite us in. I'm going to get old Charlie to assemble his people and surrender their weapons.
How the hell do you expect to do that? Livingston practically shouted.
Because I'm going to tell them some of them want to put a bullet in his head, and we're there to find them. They'll lay down their weapons, and then we'll tell him that we're interviewing the staff. Once we've got all the weapons, we own the place. This takeover can be done without firing a shot.
You know, Captain, as crazy as this sounds, it may just work. I mean, it really could work, Livingston said.
I just don't want to get any of my soldiers or these civilians killed, Sheffield said.
Sarge stood up.
Captain, I don't know what you did in your civilian life, but you're in the Army, now more than ever. You're a commissioned officer at that. You're going to have to make decisions that will, Sarge emphasized the last word, get people killed, whether it's your enemy or some of those under your command. All we can do is plan the best we can to minimize the latter.
Sheffield nodded his head.
I know, it's just life is hard enough right now. Adding casualties to the mix will make things that much worse. Just want to anticipate that scenario.
You're right. Life is tough right now.
But you're out here, and those poor people are trapped in there. Some of them may want to be there, and that's fine. But if there's even one person in there being held against their will, then it's got to be dealt with, Sarge said.
Sheffield thought about that for a minute.
How many of my people's lives is that one person worth? What's a fair trade?
Sarge wagged his finger at him.
What's that you're wearing there?
Sheffield looked down.
What, my uniform?
Exactly, a uniform. And not a mailman's or a basketball player's. You're wearing the uniform of the United States Army. Keeping that in mind, you're not in a position to decide which missions you will and won't take. You have no politics. It is up to us to go into harm's way on behalf of those who cannot defend themselves.
Sheffield let out a long breath and nodded.
You're right. Let's get to it, then. What do we need to do now?
Assemble your NCOs. When the sand table is done, we'll go over it. Then, we need to get everyone organized. Everyone needs to be in clean uniforms as sharp as possible. They have to look the part. Get all your trucks cleaned out and ready, too. How are you on fuel?
Sheffield looked at Livingston.
Low. Very low. We have enough to put some in every truck, but not much beyond that, Livingston said.
Well, that's fine. This is a one-way trip. They got fuel there. And we'll need to make sure we've got an NCO in each truck. I don't want anyone getting trigger happy, Sarge said.
We've got that covered. We'll split the squads up and stick a couple of the civilians in to supplement the ones that are short.
I've scrounged up enough uniforms for them as well, Livingston said.
How about weapons and ammo? Sarge asked.
Oh, yeah. With that delivery, there's plenty.
Good. Then, let's get to work on the model so we can get everyone up to speed. Have you picked out your civilians yet?
I've got a list of volunteers. We picked out a dozen that we feel are up to the task, Sheffield said.
I'll round out the non-coms, Livingston said.
Good. I'm going to check on the boys working on the sand table.
Sarge found the guys out on the road. They had a large area swept clean and were laying out leaves, sticks, and rocks to indicate structures inside the camp.
Ted was holding the drawing and pointing out where the various things were to be placed. Ian and Mike were arguing over the materials they were using. Jamie was knelt on the opposite side of the area they were working on, shaking her head.
No, use the magnolia leaves for the tents. They're bigger, Mike said.
What's the difference? A leaf is a leaf, Ian said.
Mike snatched up a smaller leaf.
No, it's not. Use the bigger ones, he snapped, as he threw the leaf.
You two are idiots, Jamie said.
Mike and Ian both looked up. Mike asked,
What, you got a better idea?
Just pick one, jeez.
Teddy, you got this under control? Sarge asked.
Ted looked up.
Yeah, I got it, if these two will stop arguing.
Hey, we're not arguing. We've got creative differences, Mike said, as he knelt at the edge of the model.
Sarge chuckled.
Yeah, that's what you got. Hurry up and get this done.
Looking at his watch, he added,
You got an hour.
Shaking his head, he spun on his heels and walked off.
Charles Tabor sat behind his desk, looking at the stack of paper in front of him. His deputy, Ed Moreland, sat in a chair on the other side of the desk. He was holding a file and tossed it onto Charlie's desk.
What do you want to do with those girls? Ed asked.
Charlie picked up the file and flipped it open.
Well, they admitted to it. The rules say they have to be executed.
What about the claims you raped one of them?
Charlie looked up.
He's dead, so we can't ask him now, can we?
Do it tomorrow afternoon in front of a full assembly so they know what happens if they get any ideas.
He tossed the file onto his desk and picked up another from the pile.
We get anything out of those two we brought in?
Not yet. The guys roughed the old man up pretty bad, so he hasn't been questioned yet, and the kid's been interrogated once. But they strung him up overnight, and he got hypothermia, nearly died. I'll have Niagara take another shot at him once his condition improves.
Charlie tossed the file onto his desk with the others.
All right. Any word on the three we're missing?
Ed shook his head.
Nope. They just disappeared. Did they disappear, or were they taken?
It's unclear. There wasn't any call from them. No spent brass. There were obvious signs of struggle. I'd say someone snatched them.
Well, keep your ears open.
He picked yet another sheaf of papers.
Okay. How about the comm link to the new camp in Apopka?
Where it is, it will be up tomorrow. Ed shifted in his chair.
You know, there's some folks here who said the state spent millions buying that land up just so they could shut those farms down. Now we're going to put it back into production again.
Well, it isn't going to be farmed like it was back then, that's for sure.
Besides, all they grew was sweet corn and sod. Sweet corn would be nice, but no one needs sod now.
Ed chuckled. Yeah, I don't see anyone wanting to purposely plant any grass anytime soon.
What are they going to be growing anyway?
I mean, if they can keep the lake from flooding, that is.
Bet no one's going to care about all that fertilizer dumped out there now.
I have no idea, Ed. I manage refugees, not crops. Those farms were a mess, but you could grow golf balls in that muck. Got anything else?
We also got a call from Frostproof wanting to know if we could send some of our people to their camp. They say they're going to be ready down there soon, and they'll need labor.
Tabor rocked back in his chair.
The hell? Their camp is bigger than ours, and they don't have enough people there?
Ed shrugged.
Just relaying the message, boss.
Tell them we'll send what we can, but they'll have to provide transport.
Already did. I would imagine we'll start getting more and more requests along these lines as spring gets closer. There's going to be lots to plant, and those fields will need tending, Tabor said.
There's going to be a bunch of really unhappy people soon.
Going from doing software programming to running a hoe on a farm is going to be a shock, Ed said with a chuckle.
They want to eat. They got to work. That's the way it is.
He waved his hand.
All right. I got work to do.
Niagara's outside.
Tabor rolled his eyes.
What does he want?
Ed shrugged.
I don't know.
Tabor exhaled dramatically.
Send him in on your way out.
Ed smiled and left the office. After a moment, Niagara was standing at attention in the doorway.
Come on in, Niagara. Take a seat.
Niagara nodded and stepped in, not taking a seat.
Thank you, sir.
Tabor sat back in his seat, folding his hands across his chest.
What can I do for you?
I wanted to give you a report on the interrogations to this point, Niagara said.
Tabor sat up in his chair.
What have you learned?
Nothing of substance.
No more than you already knew.
A look of annoyance spread across Tabor's face.
Then why are you here if you have nothing to tell me?
I simply wanted to keep you apprised of the situation, Niagara said, smiling.
Look, let me make this clear. I don't want to be kept apprised. I only want the end result with no details of the trip it took to get there.
Now Tabor smiled.
Unlike you, my interest is in the destination, not the journey.
Niagara nodded.
I see. I'll report to you once I reach the destination, if you'll excuse me, Niagara said, as he turned for the door.
Tabor looked down at his papers and shook his head.
Where did they get these people?
Dunlap knelt in front of the model of the camp.
Wow, looks really good.
Sarge nodded.
What can you tell me?
Our intel didn't provide too much detail.
He pointed at the rows of magnolia leaves.
Well, these are the tents for the detainees. They're brought in here.
He pointed to a couple of leaves near the front of the camp. And processed, then moved here. He went on to point out the medical, mess, and latrine facilities, as well as fuel storage, motor pool, and equipment storage.
Where's the armory? Ted asked.
It's inside this connex here, underground. There's a set of steps that take you underground once you're inside. All weapons and ammo are stored there.
So what sort of weapons do you guys have? What could we be facing if these rogues get to them?
Sarge asked, keeping up the lie. Dunlap looked at Wallace.
You know better than me.
Wallace cleared his throat. M4s, saws, couple of Browning 50s.
He was cut off by Mike.
Why the fuck does a law enforcement agency need 50s?
Wallace smiled.
Just as strong. Just as well equipped. Remember that speech?
Sarge bit his tongue.
I remember. What else?
Well, let's see. Everyone carries a Glock. There's a few 300 Win Mag scope rifles and a few M320 launchers.
Jesus! 320s?
Mike blurted out. Sarge shot him a look, telling him to rein it in.
We mainly use them for less than lethal. They're for gas and stuff like that,
Dunlap said.
Do you have any lethal for them? Sarge asked.
Oh, yeah, we got that too, Wallace said.
Where's the CP? Sarge asked.
Wallace pointed it out. Ted knelt down and pointed at a rifle magazine with sticks arrayed in a square around it.
What's this?
That's the detainment facility, Dunlap said.
Who's held there? Sarge asked.
You know, troublemakers. People caught committing crimes. Sometimes they take people straight there from reception. I don't know why. I'm not part of that.
Anything else we need to know?
Not really. It's basically run like a big jail. People come in and they go out.
Is that how they operate? Like a jail? Ted asked. What I mean is, that's how the security is set up, looking in?
Yeah, for the most part. They do fence line patrols, drag the roads, that sort of thing. Other than the gates, everything is focused in.
Thanks for the input, gentlemen. Why don't you guys go get some rest while we get ready to move? Sarge said.
Jess was moved back to her cell once they realized Shane's hypothermia was no longer an issue. What she'd initially thought was going to be a horrible experience had turned out to be an almost enjoyable break from the monotony of isolation. Shane stayed under the blankets. He expected they would take them and was surprised when they didn't. Any time he was not under them, he would start to catch a chill. Now his thoughts focused around when he would have to face Niagara again, and that was surely in his future. The door to the unit opened, and Shane listened as footsteps grew nearer. The sound of his cell unlocking was accompanied by the usual light washing in. He hid under the blankets to avoid it. Then the nurse pulled his blankets back and began to check him out, taking his temperature, checking his pulse, the usual routine. What she did not do, unlike any other healthcare professional, was ask him how he felt. That was irrelevant.
How does he look?
A man's voice asked.
He's getting better. Probably one more day and he'll be back to normal. Well, nearly normal, she said.
You got one more day there, sport. Then you've got a date with your favorite person, the man laughed. You and him will have all kinds of fun.
When the door closed, relief washed over Shane. Sure, he had to meet Niagara again, but at least it wasn't today. He wasn't sure he could take it right now. The men went to Calvin's cell, where the nurse checked him over as well. The diagnosis for him was not as positive as Shane's.
His ribs are healing slowly,
He's old, and old people just don't heal that fast, the nurse said.
Well, how long will it take him to get healed up? The man asked.
It could take weeks.
Better hurry up, old man. They aren't going to feed your worthless ass forever.
Calvin didn't respond from the floor where he was lying with his arms over his eyes. There was a lot he wanted to say, but he was in no shape to deal with the consequences. The men continued down the row of cells. As they passed Jess's cell, one of them banged on her door.
Wake up!
He shouted. The other banged on Fred's and Mary's cells.
Tomorrow's the day, ladies. You're finally going to get what's coming to you, the man said, then began to laugh.
Yep, tomorrow's your big day, the other shouted.
Jess was immediately terrified. She tried to convince herself that she didn't know what that statement meant, but deep down, she knew. She sank against the wall. Fred took the statement without any emotion. She'd already accepted the fact. There was no escaping from her current situation, and she knew it. It'd taken time to come to the conclusion, and it was hard to accept. But now that she had accepted it, there was nothing more that could affect her. She didn't want to give the bastards the satisfaction of ruining her last hours. Eric sat on an empty fuel drum, staring at the detention facility. He was thinking of ways to get Fred out of there, and fast. But then what? Where would they go? They'd have to leave the grounds, with no place to stay, without any food. Wait a second, he thought to himself. Looking back at the motor pool, he started to develop a plan. Kay would probably give him food, or at least turn a blind eye if he took some. He could stash it in a truck along with weapons and extra ammo. The hard part would be getting out of the camp. He'd never get through the gates with Fred in tow. He thought about how he could pull that off when an idea struck him. Right before the breakout, he would cut through both fences, opening a path. He could move a truck over to the fence, cut it open, and head to the detention center. The fence line was only about 100 yards past the detention facility. When Cortez and the other idiot showed up to deliver food, he'd go inside with them, as he had the other day, and shoot them both. Once they were down, he'd take the keys and get Fred out. Then he thought about the other girls. If they wanted to come, they could. If not, they were on their own. Eric hopped off the barrel and headed for the kitchen. It was still a rough plan, but it was the best one he could think of. He decided to run parts of it past Kay. As it was between services, Eric found Kay in the dry goods storage, doing an inventory. The shelves weren't exactly overflowing.
Hey, Kay, what you doing?
Eric said, as he came up behind the older woman. Kay yelled and jumped, turning around with a hand over her chest.
Eric, you scared the life out of me!
Oh, I'm sorry, I wasn't trying to. Kay smoothed her hair, composing herself.
I'm inventorying our supplies.
Eric looked at the shelves.
Doesn't look like there's much here.
There's supposed to be a delivery tomorrow. I was just trying to see what we have on hand.
Well, that's kind of what I wanted to talk to you about.
Kay laid her clipboard on a shelf.
What do you mean?
Eric looked around, then quietly asked, Is there anyone else in here?
No, what's going on?
Kay asked, concern in her voice. Look, this needs to stay between you and me. Can you promise me that?
What is it? What are you talking about?
Will you promise me that you won't say anything to anyone about what I'm going to tell you?
All right, Eric, I promise. What's wrong?
Eric took a deep breath. I'm going to get Fred out. Kay's eyes went wide.
What? How are you going to do that?
The less you know, the better for you. Then why are you even telling me? I don't understand.
Because I need your help.
When I get her out, we're leaving here and we need food. Kay slowly nodded her head.
I see. You don't have to give me anything. Just let me, you know, take some.
Kay looked upset by what she was hearing.
I don't know. I don't want to end up over there, too.
Without even thinking, Eric blurted out, "Then come with us."
Kay was shocked.
What? Come with you? Where are you going?
Eric looked at the floor and shrugged his shoulders.
I don't know yet. I'll have to figure that out. But anywhere is better than here.
Kay looked around the kitchen.
How do you plan on getting out of here?
You're going to just try and run?
They'll catch you in no time. You'll need to be smart about this, Eric.
Well, I'm going to take a truck, so we'll have transportation. I'm taking weapons and ammo, too.
Kay started thinking it over. The idea of getting out of camp was intriguing, but the uncertainty of what lay outside the camp's fence was scary.
I don't know if I could, Eric. I mean, where do you plan to go?
Hell, how are we going to get out of here?
I can get us out, I think.
You think?
This isn't the sort of thing we're going to do on a hunch. Either you can or can't.
Do you want to end up dead?
Kay was incredulous. Look, I want to get her out of there, and I've decided I want out of here, too. I'll do whatever it takes to get out.
When are you going to do this?
Soon. There isn't much time before the...
Eric swallowed hard.
Execution.
Kay thought about the situation for a minute. She'd like to be in charge of her own life, too. But it was scary to think about having to try to survive without the camp. She'd been there long enough that it was the only life she knew now.
Let me know when you're going to do it. I've got to think about it.
What about the food? Eric asked.
You can take what you want. If I don't go, I'll just say it was stolen. If I do come, it won't matter, will it?
Eric smiled.
I guess not.
He wrapped his arms around the older woman.
Thanks, Kay.
Kay patted his back.
No problem. Just think it through. I don't want you winding up dead over this.
Me neither. Me neither.
They released their embrace, and Eric added,
I gotta go. Got things I need to check out, so that this is a smart plan.
Kay nodded, and Eric quickly left. Kay stood there thinking about what he'd said for a long time. It was both petrifying and exhilarating, the thought of getting out of the camp. Even though she wouldn't admit it at the moment, she knew in her gut that she didn't want to be here forever. Eric went back to the motor pool to look for a truck. The Hummers were fuel-thirsty, but not nearly as bad as the other options, so one would have to do. At the pool, he started checking the truck and headed to the mechanic's office. He knew they kept a roster of all the vehicles and their statuses in there. While he was going through the log, he remembered something that would really help. The locker for the scavenging crew. The locker was literally a one-stop shop for what he was planning.
Why didn't I think of this before? He thought to himself,
as he surveyed the saws, ammo, batteries, body armor, first aid supplies, and stack of MREs inside of it. He took a quick inventory. Everything he needed was there. It would just be a matter of loading it quickly when the time came. Returning his attention to the log, he read that one of the Hummers had recently been serviced and went to look for it in the rows of vehicles. After he found the truck, he started it up. It seemed to run just fine. Now, he needed to make sure it was still there when they made the escape. There was only one way to take a truck out of service, and that was to red tag it. But he needed a reason.
It's all I need, a reason. Doesn't have to be legit, Eric thought.
Going back to the mechanic's desk, he looked around for anyone who might snitch on him being there. Seeing no one, he grabbed a red tag and took it back out to the truck. Filling out the tag, he listed the default as electrical short. In the description box, he wrote, "Shock driver when attempting to start." anyone other than the mechanic that saw the ticket would just move on to the next. And if the mechanic saw it, he would have to find Eric to find out what happened. Either way, the truck would be there until he needed it. With the transportation element sorted out, he breathed a tiny sigh of relief. His mission was going to be easier than he'd first anticipated. He smiled to himself and headed back toward the kitchen to reassure Kay. It was there that he realized his timetable had just become a hell of a lot shorter. Eric arrived back at the kitchen to find Cortez there, collecting meals for the prisoners and the detention center.
"Sup, Vanasek?" Cortez asked.
"Same old shit, man. What are you up to?"
"Getting ready for the big day," he said with a smile.
Kay and Eric both looked at him.
"What big day?" Eric asked.
"Oh, you haven't heard?"
"No, heard what?" Kay asked.
"There's gonna be an execution tomorrow."
"Execution? Who's being executed?" Eric asked, playing dumb.
"Those three murdering bitches are gonna be shot in front of a full assembly of the camp tomorrow."
Eric's head started to spin. It took considerable effort to remain on his feet. As his knees wanted to buckle, Kay was just as stunned. Her mouth was hanging open.
"Hey, man, you all right?"
Cortez asked, squinting at Eric.